Miss Vink. Thank you so much for making it to the interview. And thank you for being patriotic, because I only see people who apply for the patriotic because they want to do the best for their country. My name is Thandile Sunduza. I'm the chairperson of the Buffalo Committee of the Encounter. The people I want to interview are, you are the members of parliament. You have one of Sueli. She's from JKZN like you. And then you've got Honorable Moss, Honorable Tapani, Honorable Story, Honorable Nandita Shivana, Honorable Mabunda. Then you have Honorable Sandebeth, I think you went out quickly. And you have Honorable Fasalvik and Honorable Chisaila. Oh, I think they went out first. You've got 5 minutes missing. No answer is wrong or right. To answer the way you're comfortable, you say whatever you want in the interview. So it's one way. You must express yourself the way you want. I hope you've got a pen and a paper there, because usually some of the countries will ask us, what do you say again? And then the fact that the gentleman there, he's recording whatever that you're saying, he's been recorded. Because some people, they like to sue, even to say no. Yeah, I was victimized, I was not asked, but fortunately I'm a law person, so the evidence is there, right? whatever you say. And be comfortable. Okay, with Red Hawk TV, thanks for applying for the board, a portion of the board. Welcome, Ms. Singh. Unfortunately, we also look at age group here, so you look younger than what you saw here. You must tell us how to do it at the end of the day. And we've got your TV buttons. Tell us about icebreaker, who's missing, just in 1 minute. And why did you apply for World? Why do you think we should apply to? No, okay, thank you.
Okay, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Shamila Singh. I'm a citizen of South Africa. I reside in Durban. It was quite a struggle for me to become an attorney initially, but I did it against the odds. Basically, my practice started off as human rights and representing mostly the underdog from any group, race group in South Africa. If there was an injustice that had to be righted, like a wrong to be righted, I would actually take on a case, even if it was difficult, and try my best to do what was justice. I then progressed to rural development because I had a penchant for rural development work. Even before rural development was advertising and showing an interest in that, when I started, I must say thank you to the rural development communities all over South Africa, because they have actually chiseled me and shaped my way of thinking in South Africa. I regard them as the underdog that still has to be given more rights and being attended to better as far as budget is concerned. I then realized that I was pretty good at litigation, and I went into litigation. I got right of appearance in the High Court and saved poor people the costs of hiring an advocate in many instances where they can't afford an advocate, and continued with a lot of different types of work. Very, very varied. My interests are very varied as well. Where there is a right that's been violated, I've tried to learn the law and apply it, even apply the Constitution in most aspects of the law in my office, in my correspondence, in my dealings with people. I've also realized that it's not such a good thing to litigate. It's better to mediate and make people understand that, you know, more fruit can be borne when you're mediating rather than litigating. So I've branched into that as well. And basically, that's me, attorney.
Thank you, Honorable. Another one wants to ask questions. You might have already read a book.
Okay.
Yeah. So, one next time, too long, someone will lose you on the way. Some will go 10 years and will lose you. But I'm not saying
Thank you, Chairperson. Good day, Mr. Singh. I think what you said is very important. I'm glad to hear you're good in education and so on. Because I'm saying that some of the other people we interview said there's not enough teeth in the bun stop pact and so on and so forth. But if we look at the use of South African languages built from last week, there's a lot of things that need application. It's just not just a law over there. People need action. They want to see it work. Your role as an attorney, how will you strengthen PONSOL? Do you think it will be possible with your law background to give some birth to this something they call the PONSOL Act?
Yes, most definitely. I have interpretation skills, which I've studied interpretation of laws and definitions and things like that, but I have practical experience as well. I have a nose for it. When it comes to interpreting laws and stuff like that. I don't know everything, but I can contribute meaningfully. I've done a lot of criminal litigation and civil litigation where you learn to read the body language and you look beyond the words when people speak, when they're addressing you, you know, to see whether there's genuineness, whether somebody's taking you for a ride or gaffing and all that. I'm also pretty good with the research. Evidence matters. I'd like to think that I'm pretty good, and that's where my contribution will come in. Perhaps if you're having a tribunal and people appear before you, even if it's senior counsel, junior counsel. I've also advanced my attorney skills by doing a court in the Constitutional Court, which is around being an aspiring judge in South Africa, and I've learned a lot through that call. I have a certificate, so perhaps I can use my skill that I got that way and through the university, combine it and contribute something meaningful.
Thank you,
thank you, sir. I've got no doubt in your legal ability having control, you see. But PANSAP has got a mandate. What do you think is lacking for PANSAP board to carry its mandate?
What do I think is lacking?
Yeah, for PANSAP board to carry its mandate.
Well, I understand it doesn't have a board at the moment, and they need to be realigned again. You need people who can understand that there's a combination of things that work together. A combination of skills, firstly. A combination of people's attitudes and personalities, also very important. Because you've got to be able to agree to disagree in a mature way without taking personal issue with each other. People must be honest, have integrity, be transparent when they're dealing with each other and with their various stakeholders. I think this board lacked, previous board lacked maybe skills and training in good governance and understanding of how to deal with financial statements and risk issues is possible. And lack of understanding can then end up in a lot of problems. You know, you can look bad because you're not doing things the way they're supposed to be done. Not because you are naturally bad, but because you didn't have those skills. That could be another way of interpreting what happened here.
I think it's your question.
But constitutionally, all the 11 languages of Africa are supposed to be equal. But what we see here is that the previously the indigenous language, which were not previously recognized, are still lagging behind. What do you think you can do if you become a board member to try and pick them up so to be equal with the other languages? Number two, I see presently you're chasing an associate, you know, where you are being employed. Do you think you'll have enough time to do their business and serve on the council board? Thank you.
Well, I've been running a business since I was in my 20s and now I'm in my 50s. And I've changed my focus from being in the rat race and running around like a young attorney to consulting, and it gives me more time to deal with a lot of things. And also to, you know, knowledge is not powerful unless it's shared. Now, I believe that I have a lot of knowledge, and why leave South Africa if you have this knowledge? Use the knowledge where it's required in the country with people that need assistance.
Okay, thank you. I think with the explanation and the knowledge that we have in the legal fraternity, which you put it before us here, I think it's sufficient. I just have a question, maybe if you can just chip us on the background about this body that we're talking about as a person. Much as I can understand that you might be having the knowledge about the PESAB and the constitution, but you have the background of this kind of an entity. Much as I'm saying, it might be a follow-up question related to the previous question, because it's constitutional mandate, among other things, to promote development, to do a lot in relation to the previously disadvantaged languages, or maybe to have a well-developed language program that everybody will see as a guide towards their language and their culture. Thank you.
Thank you. My understanding of PANZAB is it was created quite correctly in terms of the constitution, and the latest act is Act 10 of 1999, but there was a previous act in 1995. It was created to assist not only Khoi and San and Dama languages, but also Hindi, Greek, Portuguese, various other languages, I think Telugu, Tamil, and all that. I've mentioned Portuguese, and I may have missed out some languages. It was created not only to assist minority, but to preserve something that, for me, is very important, because you're preserving indirectly the history of various people, and you're not losing something that's very important. It's multilingualism and culturalism, combination of that. And it's important to do this because communication is an art. Look at it as an art, and art is something that you can't restrict, and therefore you shouldn't restrict communication because it's an art, you know. And these languages should survive for future generations. We don't know, they might be minorities now, but in the future they could become a majority spoken language. We don't know what's going to happen. And ideally for me, I would like to see, besides the dictionaries that are being compiled by the lexicography unit, should also have considered time capsules where you put the history of these languages and preserve it, maybe bury it somewhere for future generations to find. That's something that I was thinking about deeply. Have I answered your question?
I just want to check anything at the end of the day. I will ask the question, but it is no offense. You are Hindu or Indian? Are you Hindu?
Well, I'm South African.
Okay.
My forefathers were Indian from India.
Which language do you speak?
I speak English. And I can understand when an elderly person talks to me in a couple of languages. I can understand. But I speak English.
Why I'm asking this question is because the same constitution also speaks about the promotion of South African languages like Hindu, Gujarati, others in that the Indian people speak. I'm raising this because not because we are Indian. I have a concern which happens often Africans as well. Our languages are diminishing. Your younger children might not understand what your forefathers spoke, which becomes very important. So what's the role do you think, like me, I'm not Xhosa, but they put me under Xhosa because at some stage I'm doing, you don't even know what they call me because I'm truly. So there's this battle, I'm still, there's this battle that I'm truly, Zulus are saying, I'm not Xhosa, truly is a part of them. And the pastors are always saying, I'm truly a part of them. The person who speaks the language is my grandmother and my lady's grandma. And this is more diminishing. One of the one, Limbondo, and he is not Xhosa, but also classified under Xhosa. You know, I'm raising this because we are experiencing it, and I've seen, I've walked around, and I've never heard Indian. I've never heard Indians speaking their language, even the younger generation. It was a concern to me because those languages, are they in the constitution? That must be promoted. I think, what are the other languages also? And all of those other languages that are from the European side of it. So what do you think as missing should be done? What do you think enough is done for that? Because you're going to the board member and here are these people are going to say to you, actually, so, well, what is it about the constitution and state? There are also other languages as well.
I think, you know, for me to answer the question now would be unfair on the entire Hindi Gujarati community. It needs more deliberation and discussion in a more healthy way, where a lot of people can engage as a meeting or something, like in Java. I understand what you're saying, though.
Yeah.
Yes, because the younger generation of the Indians consider themselves to be South African, and that is the problem. Because they watch Indian movies, they speak modern, the languages they speak it, but in a modern way, but not in the way it's spoken in India. So I understand what you're saying, but the languages should be preserved. No matter how much they are in the minority, something should be done to preserve languages.
No, I asked this question, as I say, not because it was even the Sam, the Nama and the Kul. It is the same challenges that we are facing, that they are children who speak Afrikaans or English. So my concern was the diminishing of languages. There was a person who spoke about, remember who spoke, I don't remember what it was saying, that the languages are also now modified. They're saying Zulu, say Uinja. The person can say to you Uinja. You are saying also the urbanization. If you say you are Uinja, if I can say that to you, go. A person will say, I thought you a dog. But I'm not saying literally you are a dog, that is a dog. But in this younger generation, when you say you are a dog, maybe if you say you are a dog, they say you are something. You are powerful, you know, in a way of saying,
yes.
Yeah, there's a dog, he's got money, you know, so I'm just, we are concerned because those languages are really diminishing. Huh? You're a dog,
but,
master.
Yeah.
Okay.
Even, you know, even if it is diminishing, there's nothing preventing this board from getting the language together, you know, in a recording or a video, or I'd say it's in a little time capsule, and you preserve it. Even if it eventually does diminish, it's kept in a museum of languages, so we know our history.
Hello, sir. Any question? Sorry?
No. My time to
clarify what time.
I had to the consent button.
Yeah, it's fine.
I think I read the sentence in another. So the minister, I was nominated your candidate for appointment by the minister.
Oh, okay. Okay,
any
other questions?
Can I just say something?
Yes.
One more thing. Before I go, I mean, even if I don't make it, you know, this board, this board, no, I mean, I'm leaving a legacy before I leave. I think, maybe it's going to be helpful, maybe I'm talking nonsense, but when a board is sitting together, you don't just have knowledge of the legalities or your skills, your expertise, where you're coming from. You've got to combine that with National Treasury regulations, the King's Commission, and all of that. And that's what makes a very strong board. When they combine both, then you know what risk, governance, performance, how to read variables in budgets and financial statements. You combine the both, then it's strong. But just being from law or being from accounting background and not having that knowledge, maybe the person can learn the knowledge. It might not work out. He might have a repeat of what happened.
Thanks for that comment, Honorable Dora. I think it was going to be for up to you. What do you think is going to constitute a board master, what is it on this issue? But I think you've already, it was your answer what I was going to ask. Yes,
sorry.
Honorable Dora.
No, Jefferson, I think your explanation just addressed to what is. Actually, it is our question to ask you that, because that's what we think about and what we know, that's what we know of a composition of the board. So this is one of our questions to all the candidates, if they do have specialties on the very areas that you have just mentioned. Now, I couldn't ask you because I was not here, whether you do have expertise on the other area that you mentioned, governance. Yes, we do have legal experience and financial. That's what we want to know from all the candidates that come in, because that's what we think a board comprises.
Yes, I actually have been to several courses, and I'm still going to courses at the Gibbs International School of Business. That's what board members must do throughout the whole year. They must go to some course to educate themselves if they don't have those skills. It's part of National Development Plan as well. I have a lot of skills, but I got to work in the board for you to see it. And I can tell you I have a lot of skills, but I've done a lot of work on a lot of committees. Audit, risk, human resources, and remuneration, and ethics committee, risk committees, you know, I've sat at board meetings, I've got practical experience. But whatever is linked to what I do for human rights is what strengthens my capabilities, actually. I don't know if I've answered your question, but also the person that's sitting on the board has to be person that's honest, that has integrity, that's able to see wrong and not follow wrong and set themselves apart without fighting with the rest of the board, you know. got to do it in a mature, dignified way. That's also important. It's part of what a board member should be and do.
That has been given to us through the curriculum. From what she's saying, this is very lean. I don't know why did she to make it so lean, because she seems to have a whole lot of experience. So that's what really makes us want to expand to the areas that she has just mentioned. Otherwise, there's one question I'm going to ask. Now that she has all the experience, what was lacking from the previous cancer form that you can tell us about? And then, what is your understanding about the issue of languages in terms of how they are taught in our schools, public schools, and somebody just came here and told us what is the disadvantage of beginning to learn indigenous languages at tertiary level. I understood what she said, because it means if you are learning at that stage, it will be just as good as teaching a child that is a great art. And what would be your advice then?
Thank you. I think the first question, what is lacking, I have answered that question.
I'm responding to what maybe she says. Maybe you don't understand what she said. She said she has responded to the question. I'm asking questions precise. That's why I said I was very skeptical to ask any question, because I went out for some time. Hence, I'm asking this question. And I don't know whether the person who asked you the question, is it in the same form that I asked? Because it can be very broad what I've asked you.
Okay. I did not sit on the previous board. From my understanding, the little that I have read about the previous board and what happened. I believe that there should have been more transparency. There should have been more they should have asked more questions to protect the stakeholders' interests. Cost, for one, saving costs is very important, because it can become or be regarded as an irregular expenditure or fruitless and wasteful expenditure. It can be questioned by external audit if internal audit misses it or doesn't show it in the correct way in the financial statements. It will be found out. So when the board was deliberating, they were not protecting the stakeholders' interests by asking the right questions. There should have been, maybe if they weren't allowed to ask questions, each person should have been asked whether they have anything to contribute with concerning whatever issues there were within the board. And maybe they should have, I'm not sure if they went for education in the form of workshops. Maybe that could have prevented what happened with this previous board if they were educated on governance and risk and performance and strategy and how to find holes in the carpet. With regard to indigenous languages at schools, I regret that when I was at school, I was not offered a very commonly spoken language in KZN, that's Zulu. And when I became a lawyer, I could speak Fanagalo or Kitchen Zulu. And then I bought a dictionary. I don't know if the dictionary was from this institution, from one of the units, the lexicography unit. But it helped me to speak better and engage with my clients in Westville Prison, and when they came to talk about other commercial issues, I was able to speak. Every time they laughed at me and I made a mistake and we sort of, I polished up a little, but I'm not as good as a Zulu speaking person, but I can engage in Zulu. I try.
Oh,
you can? I can gossip with you.
Oh.
Indigenous language is very important. It's very crucial that they be taught and not just be offered English and Afrikaans. It should be offered something else that they learn at home. It should be a wide selection. The students should be able to choose an indigenous language. It's very important.
I think the run is over. It's not very, very over, but I remember the hit with your questions right now. But I'd like to give you a homework. So thank you for coming and making time, and I think for you to make an application, it was a patrol check, but for now you might not be in any structure, but I would give you a homework to share with the community to say that the earlier question I asked you, it's a content for all of us, because if the constitution can table certain languages and the recognition of other languages, that means we all have the responsibility to promote them, and if they are in the constitution, then it means that they are recognized as South African languages. If they are in the constitution, it means that all of us must do something about it. What is said, I always say the organic intellectuals are older now, very, very old. So I'm not even anyone who's closer to organic intellectuals, I say my daughter's don't kill me. So the organic intellectuals really are leading this world, you know, and when they live with the language and the culture, yeah. It's a concern also I was raising it too, because I've raised it with the same community, the Namas, I've raised it with the Amapondo, and it was on Facebook yesterday, it was a big topic, but it was Amapondo. I've raised it with Amashubi, I've raised it with, which other clients are in the Popo, Kilo Radio. All those languages have got their dialectics. You find that there's 20 dialects that we don't know about. So I'm raising this because you are a South African, Gujarati, and what's the other one? What is it? Tamil? What is it? Are South African languages. They might have they originated wherever, but at the end of the day, they are South African languages for the fact. So I'm not giving you a homework to say how do you also do it to ensure that the language survives, it doesn't diminish, because everyone got their rights. So we are very concerned about languages, and that's why I asked you that question earlier, can you speak it? You know, because it's one of those issues that we've been raising with many of these people. What are you combining in case it is met the language course to say that, okay, this is the majority of the language that it was speaking. It was not an offensive question, but to say that, yeah, all of us, we are really, really concerned. Yeah. Honourable members, we can release Nessine. Nessine, thank you so much for availing yourself and your time to come to the parliament and to perform the committee. And that looks like to not take off, or it was not taking off. Is it?
Yes.
What was happening this time? Taking off from Devon?
I think there was very bad weather.
Oh, in Devon. Oh, okay.
So, but it was delayed by about 50 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
No, it's fine.
But can I say something?
Yes.
I want to say thank you to all of you for having me here and giving me an opportunity to address you. And I'm grateful for that.
Thank you, Ms. Singo. Well, to back to Devon and oh, thank you. And Remita Tsuchiki, thank you so much. I thank you once again, on our members, and honorable members. What is happening with you? This man is a soldier, so you must behave when soldiers are around. Joaquin. Welcome to Cape Town. My name is Trangelis Nduza. I'm the chairperson of the Cultural Committee on Arts and Culture. I would like to welcome you to Parliament. Is it your first time here? Okay, when you speak, should we not just show you quickly what you're supposed to do with? So, it's your first time here.
Okay, when you speak, you just press that button.
When you're finished, you just switch it or switch it off. Because with the interviews, we are recording you. Because we are a lawyer, a lot of people are suing in South Africa, so we have our recording in the South Africa. That's funny, you don't go and say, this honorable members of parliament, they ask me discriminatory questions and all those things. We are also producing ourselves. Well, the lawsuit is the latest trend. We are even worse than Americans now. As I said, my name is Angelis Nduza. People are going to interview a member of parliament. I'll just introduce you to them. We've got honorable Musweli, honorable Moss. Next is honorable Ndapane. Next is honorable Story. Next is honorable Nami Tekulubana. At the back there is honorable Pascal Pig. There are two others, you see them walking. Honorable just went out quickly. Honorable Sandra Spence, he just went out quickly. And honorable, I did not see you, you know. Living Horton, you've got 45 minutes with us. Answer the way you like. We are not here to judge your understanding of issues. We just want to hear your views. I hope you've got a pen and a paper there to write the question. Because some of the candidates will forget what you will ask. So it will be easier for you. Just relax, just like parliamentarians, you'll see they're making noise, they are withdrawing seats around, not in a long time. And some of them might have a crush on you. So if you are sitting on honorable most, I think it's just like you, and you're sitting opposite to each other. And look, she smiles, is it? And then just relax. And this is how we are. We are a happy family. And we have read your profile, we've read your CV. Just tell us something that is not interesting about who you are, and why do you apply actually should we nominate you as a candidate? What is it that you think you can bring in into the board of council, you know? And as a Willis Holmes, so you are a disciplined man, so I expect you to be disciplined. You bring discipline, maybe. Are you members? Okay. That was my first question. Okay.
If I do have water, thank you. And do I Do I take your questions one after the other? That is question and I answer, or I take question, and then talk and follow.
You see, I told you the soldier is orderly. He takes instructions. No, I'll ask them, you'll answer, just one and answer. Yeah.
Thank you so much, and thanks once again for the opportunity. I do not know if I'm audible. Thank you so much. I think first and foremost, collective leadership is important, and the fact that the board operates as a collective, and the constitutional mandate that goes with the operations of the board are the ones that actually motivated me or whet my appetite, so to speak, in relation to participating in matters of the language board, if I may shorten it that way. The way it has been structured, and with the advent of the new legislation on the usage of official languages, I think it makes it, it has put, that legislation has kind of put some practical measurements for a board to operate. And with that, I must say, to the board what I bring is, first and foremost, the experience that I have in the diversity of life, as you may have seen on my short CV, I think it may enhance the board. You would have noticed that sometime when I was younger, around 1997, I participated in another competition, and the publisher took interest in the book that I wrote. I wrote it in North and Soto editor then called. So that gives the honorable members an indicator that I have interest in the promotion of languages that maybe do not have a center stage.
While you still answering, from a window walked in, and I'm her desk walked in. Okay, now remember, thank you on the button. When I was struggling, when I'm on the desk, I'm just trying to say that would have liked to know who Mr. Makoto is. Oh, okay. Yeah. The one part of the question I asked,
I am John Mohoto. I was born and bred in the then Northern Transvaal, presently called Limpopo, previously called Northern Province. I schooled in that area much of my youth. I did my senior degree at the University of Natal, Japan. I understand it has now also changed names. And I practice law in Brukwane. I reside in the Department of Defense as a judge in the military court, as and when I am called. I am a member of the board of Samaritan Center, which is an orphanage in Polokwane. is an NGO, takes care of, you know, these kids that do not have parents or whose parents have dumped them, and the hospital calls and they give them to the Samaritan Center. Yes, generally, and in short, that's who I am. I have 1.5 kids. Yes, everybody's listening. I have a 18-year-old daughter and a 6-year-old son. And I live with their mother outside Bulawayo, in the outskirts of town. Yes, I don't know whether that gives the members an idea.
Yeah, exactly.
Only one.
Oh, okay.
I need to know.
Okay, thank you. Just wanted you to be honorable and monitor the next. Any other name? The mom says that? No, mom says that. Any other monitor? After him? I don't know what the mom says. I don't know what the mom says. I don't know what he says. I don't know. Yes, because sure, because then at the very case, when I was saying to her,
good afternoon, Mr. Malot. Let me know, how are you going to go about to promote the multilingual and to develop it, even the sign language and the indigenous one. You have so many positions that you are holding. Let's say you get this one here. How are you going to manage? Thank you.
In terms of time, I think time, life is about the management of time. When you wake up and when you eat, when you sleep, when you drink. It's management of time. And the diet that I run with the Department of Defense is such that if there is, they first check my program to set up a court session, for just to give an example. So if we have things to do appertaining the business of the day to day, they call me and say, can you look at your calendar in 3 weeks' time? Where are you? And if I'm engaged, we move that court session to the day on which I'm not engaged. So the management of time will be easy. That what will not be easy is the promotion of languages. I don't want to say to people it will be as easy as spreading butter on the bread. But as I said in my opening address, the good thing with the present legislation of 2012 for the usage of official languages has put checks and balances, which will make the promotion of those languages, including the San and the Khoi languages, as well as the sign languages, possible. In the sense that, whilst the minister is expected, in terms of that legislation, to put in place a language unit in his department, and also the Act makes provision for establishment of language units across the department, the national departments. And those units are expected to develop a language policy as well as the implementation of that language and report to the minister and to the board as to what they are doing with that policy. So from that perspective, because there are checks and balances in place, that is how I will be able to contribute in assisting or in the monitoring of the promotion of those languages.
Thank you, Chairperson. Arising from the question of Honorable Musedi that you will always, you know, it's possible to manage time, but here you hold a very high rank of a major in the South African National Defense Force. I don't think that you will be able to manage time when you need to, when your duties call you to do as a manager there. So that's why I wonder why you want to become a board member when you are a major in the Defence Force, hopefully in Pretoria, not in the Limpopo. I happen to come from the Limpopo also. And then secondly, I just want to know, why do you think a legal background as a magistrate, what do you think it will enhance the board of PAMSA? Because that has to do, you have explained about the languages, but you specialize in the legal, you have a legal background. And then finally, I just want to know that you are a member of and John and Mohoto Associates, which if you are a member, I think is a firm of attorneys, I'm not sure. How would you divide your time amongst all these things? And what prompted you to apply to become a board member? Thank you.
Thanks, honorable member. The position that I hold in the Defence Force, my activities in the Defence Force are performed as and when duty calls. So in other words, I'm not always wearing the uniform. I explained earlier that if there is a case in which I'm expected to preside, the Defence Force will contact me. They issue our communication channels and they will confirm with me with the times and the diary at my disposal as to which date will be suitable. So that part, considering the fact that I am a reserve force member in other ways, so I'm not always there. Yes. So...
I'm sorry. I think the Honourable Member said that it's not a full-time mayor. You are a part-time in the Department of the National Defence Force.
Are you part-time or full-time?
I'm a reserve force member. A reserve force is the language used. It's not part-time, it's reserve force. Oh my goodness. I love to learn.
Alright.
Reserve force. In terms of the empowering legislation governing the Defence Force, there are regular members who put on uniform every day as civil servants. They work every day in the department. But to make sure that the department or the force has the necessary capability, they draw in the reserve component. So they call me for training, I do the necessary requirements, but then I'm not waiting for the department. They will call me, they put you there, they will call you when the need arises. So that is a reserve force. So if no need arises and all systems are in place, it's okay. That is what it means.
Long term. I'm just saying long term. I'm always interested. No, no, I remember, okay, why don't you just go to church for all of us? We are interested in many countries, they do do it. You know, yeah. They do it. And I mean, you don't drink a fire, and also those people of our homes. But I don't have to drink a fire, we can't do it. We cannot go through to them. But the way it is, okay.
I'm a listener.
Hey.
If you want
to. Yeah.
No, it's fine. Actually, I wanted to know, why does he think legal professions is that an answer? What is
required? The board itself is a mandate of the Constitution. And it is also a creation of statute, which is created by a statute. So it is necessary to have a legal understanding, so as to ensure compliance, as well as to meet the necessary objectives. You need to read and to understand the mandate itself. So it is against that background that legal background is important.
Mine is to actually refer to partly your community work. Understand that you were anyway involved with Bagalani Lana Home Care Center, which is an NGO. And you are a committee member. I can see the role that you are actually playing there. But can you just tell us a little bit more? You know, I can see it really here, you know, this PMGCT team coordinator, transfer and trainer. What is it that you refer to? Can you talk to me now, not to the paper?
Yes. I can't remember the specific year. I think it was 2000 or 2002 thereabouts. There was a case involving TAC, and TAC got judgment against the Department of Health, forcing the Department of Health to roll out the anti-retrovirus. So at that time, government did not have any plan for that type of situation. So what government did, they put about 19 pilot projects throughout the country, and they imported, so for lack of better way, a few people from the United Nations to train people on the prevention of mother-to-child transmission, so that they can train others. So Sakalani Nana is an NGO of run to coordinate the activities. It's a support group, more of it, of people living with HIV and AIDS. So I did the training on behalf of that organization, and when I completed my training as a trainer and counselor, I had to, as it was part of our agreement with the Department of Health, I had to move around the province training many other people in that respect. But now that the project has is fully functional, my service in that regard is no longer needed. So I probably last trained maybe 2 years or so ago. Maybe I must correct that part, because it's no longer, it's outdated now, it's getting outdated. But it's an activity that I did with passion. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Mpart. Some of those questions will come to all of you. Honorable, what did you have? Then Honorable Sansangwe.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Moroto.
The use of official languages bill was signed by the president in 2012, in the last year. Now, CONSOP will be responsible for monitoring the implementation of that bill. I presume that you know about the bill. It's government departments have to determine at least three languages in which they can deliver service to the public, etc. Now, as a lawyer, sir, what contribution will you be able to make to help CONSOP to actually do the monitoring of that bill? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable. After the President has signed it off on the 7th of October, it ceases to be a bill, it becomes an act of Parliament. But be that as it may, there is a prescription on how the languages must be grouped. So, with my skill of interpretation of statutes, I will be able to contribute to the board in that I will say to the board, look, the constitution says the languages must be grouped in three, but as follows, so that you don't take that language simply because you like it, or take that language simply because you like it. You must also check whether it is compliant with the requirement. For instance, it will say one group from one language from this group, and another from that group, and another from, there will be the Nguni group, the Sotho group, and there will be Venda, Tsonga, there will be the West German group, the West Germanic group in English and Afrikaans. So the Act also prescribes the picking up of the language. So I will be able to assist the board in that regard, in the monitoring. If one of somebody says, okay, this is our policy, then we read it against what the Act says to check if it is in consonant with the Act. That will be my contribution.
Thank you, sir. I was also to ask the question that has been answered exactly about the implementation of the language. But another question is, I understand, Mr. Moto, that you know the mandate of CONSOP. So if you know the mandate of CONSOP, we've got 11 official languages. On top of that, we've got Oyukan and a sign language. How do you think, taking into account that there is a law that has been already signed by the President, as you have said, with its provisions, what do you think needs to be done in regard to these languages of Africa? There are 11, and that it talks about 3. And on top of the 11, there are 3 that are not mentioned at 11. So what do you think needs to really be done with regard to the languages in South Africa?
Thank you. I have heard in the passages that there are over 25 languages spoken in this republic. As the honourable member correctly says, 11 are constitutionally official. They still the sign language and the sign languages. There has to be a starting point, and I think the Act that the honourable member has spoken about, gives the time frames for departments, for all national departments and entities of government to establish the language units And that is the starting point, because if we do not start, we cannot finish. So the starting point will be to check whether a department, what the national departments and entities and establishments are doing in relation to that. I have seen in the Act that they have about 18 months within which to set up the units, probably to be fully functional with the human resource and computers and iPads and laptops. But if we do not start, we will have nothing to monitor, because we will have two eyes. It's like shooting in the dark. The task will be more than will be born. But if the starting point can be, well, departments, how far are you? And the more so that they must, in developing that policy, they must also report to the board. So my understanding will be that will be the starting point. And because the Act also makes provision for territorial checkpoints, they say, look, every district or every unit will check wherever it is, certain circumstances, to adapt to the circumstances of the day. So it may be that wherever the sign languages or the sign languages, wherever they may be present, and space and time allow, that in their policy formulation, they will take that into account, because the Act has given that leeway, that the territorial lookout. I miss the actual words used in it, but there was some kind of free move, if I may. So I would think the starting point should be to activate the statutory language units, as well as maybe the language units that the actually the minister must establish within the department, because that will be a better tool, a day-to-day tool to check whether the other units are doing and what they are doing, and to coordinate whatever will be done.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let's go back to the three languages. According to the Act, the national departments must start on at least three languages in each department in a certain province. But reaching that three languages, how do you foresee it? Do you think it will be a difficult or an easy exercise? Take, for instance, Limpopo, your province. There's also a lot of minority languages in Limpopo. How do you envisage that? Thank you, Chair.
Yes, I take note of the difficulty that may be lying ahead. But to pick on three for the present discussion, it may not be very difficult, especially the first one. It may be easy to pick up maybe English or Afrikaans as the first, depending on the territory. It may be difficult to now ascertain which other two to add to the three. I'm speaking of to be practical, because you already have documents in a particular language, already they exist. It will not help you to say to take three languages in which there is no document. The more so that this purpose of languaging is designed for government purposes. So if we say, for instance, we take a couple of languages in which we do not have any existing document, the House will see it, but the House will not talk, except for lunchtime when the eating time comes. But for purposes of work, I'm just thinking aloud as the member is throwing that question. I would assume that for the present purposes, the former two official languages are likely to be found more often in the existing documentation, in the policies that are to come. And maybe the difficulty may be the other languages. Depending on the terrain or the province, it may be not as difficult. Yes, in Limpopo there will be. I think we'll need maybe a mechanism to use, as I'm trying to use how to pick up the first one. Maybe we'll have to have a mechanism on how we pick languages. I know there are languages that are easy to speak, very difficult to write. There are languages I've never seen a dictionary in a particular language, or if they exist, they are very, very limited. So maybe we'll have to find some mechanism, or the units, the language units, where they sit to develop a particular policy. Because at least they'll be having a lot of time. But I assume that you'll need some kind of mechanism. How do we include this one, but still exclude them, and yet make them happy? Because if we take three, we can only take three. Okay, that one says at least three, but it will be difficult maybe to take more, unless they arrange, okay, let's take five, or let's take this, and then we'll alternate this one and that one. And when the language units sit at different points and times, each one will come up with something different. All the more reason why they need to be monitored.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My question would be, Chairperson, do you not think the PENSAP as an institute is supposed to help in this country on the issue of promotion of languages to assess what nation building is? If what nation building in cohesion, if those people are serving on the board to make sure really that the mandate that they have to let those things really happening and on time according to the time when you was mentioning. Secondly, additional responsibilities regarding the implementation is what of the national language national language policy. There is four. I want to give us give me that answer. Thank you.
I don't know. It has nothing to do with the comment made earlier by the honourable member. But I have not been able to summarise the two questions that you the member has just asked. Please summarise them for me.
I'm saying, do you not think a board of PENSAP, it will maybe also responsibility on the issue of assisting this country of transforming of those languages who was in the past not recognized on the issue of nation building and cohesion. Secondly, on the issue of the national language policy framework, what additional responsibilities regarding the implementation of the national language policy are they?
Thank you. The responsibility of PENSAP to promote the multiple languages that exist in the Republic derives from the Constitution and the law. So it does not look to me that PENSAP has a choice of or any other way other than that. That is the main establishment anyway. So to promote the parity of esteem in languages, as is the mandate, I think includes in itself to discourage people from undermining other languages. That's what it essentially boils down to. So that all languages must be viewed as the same. If my Afrikaans is not good, a person should not look at that one because he can't speak Afrikaans or he can't speak that language as a lesser human being based on that language. So on that, against that background, I think that is what I understand. The council has that responsibility. In fact, it is a constitutional mandate to do so. On the implementation part, look, I think if the language units are formed as envisaged and they also report back in the manner described by law, the implementation part will be easy. I have noticed that part of what they must do after drawing up this policy, they must also make sure that it is implemented. In their report to the minister, they must indicate whether they have done and what they are actually doing in the implementation. And above all, also record the complaints that they have received in particular languages and tell the minister how they have resolved a particular complaint. So that monitoring mechanism makes the implementation easier.
Okay, so I'm going to go with the end of it. Now the time is over. Okay, I understand. What's that, please? No, I don't know. No, not here. So, no, I don't understand. What is it? Well, what is the problem? Okay, can I release the candidate first so that the people don't understand what is the problem? What is the problem? No, speak up the mic so that it can be recorded, whatever you're saying.
I'm saying she put them as my right to ask him questions. This is an interview.
So what did I do?
And I was asked one to record up, but then you close the session.
No, but the time is not over them. Okay, I know. I look at the time and there's nothing wrong that I've done. No, really, I don't understand when you can't output and say you're supposed to be here. I don't have the right to say the note. Not part of it. Really, I was just saying the time is over. 45 minutes. He has even gone beyond 45 minutes. Can I give you the liberty to ask the question? No, I don't want you to sound very dictated because if there was another question, I would think the time is over. Unless we can do that, liberty, are you still willing to stay a few more minutes for the question?
I'm at your disposal.
No,
I'm asking
you a question.
Yeah, person, I was actually to the candidate. I was actually trying to say why I was asking those two questions. That's what I was going to say. But I think earlier also he mentioned the issue that I raised. Languages can also build the nation. Never mind what language you speak. This is what he's referring to. Because in this Africa, on the ground, really, that is happening, that people looking down to one another on the issue of the language they use and undermining one another. Chairperson, I'm sorry to do this, but I must tell you I'm tired. That's why I've been quiet, but you know, there's something that bothered me when I don't know what is his name, the candidate that was here, is it Saturday or Friday, telling us that at the moment he is in the province. And he's working. He wasn't clear whether he gets his mandate from the national or from the MEC. I don't think the Act says anything about this.
Yeah.
Now, if you were to be appointed as a board member, what do you think the delegations to the provinces would, who would delegate the delegations to the province in terms of the mandate that is carried by council at nation? How would be the capability of the units that are in the province? And should they be accounting to the MECs? Just thinking of out of your knowledge of governance, maybe. Or is the responsibility of accounting should be the provinces should account to nationals? In other words, I want us to deal with this at some stage when we deal with the Arts and Culture Department on this issue of PANSALP, because it's quite a serious thing. We must be able to ask them to clarify to us. I think it is going to be one of the issues that is problematic to you board members, if you happen to be a board member.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. I'm happy that you raised that comment, because it caused confusion a lot. But I think I checked through the panel, it's nothing that I sat down. So I remember the guy when he raised it, I saw your face, because you were also like me, because it creates also not only confusion but instability as well. It causes instability, it causes because of certain interests, MCs are interested when they are not even part of the head itself, you know, also when they are not part of then those units in part of NLUs. So is that NLUs? They would want to control. I think we'll take the comment up. I think we have to release Mr. Mahoto. Mr. Mahoto, I want to apologize about what the little issue earlier on. It's part of us, don't worry. Thank you for your time. Thank you for being patriotic to come for interviews as well. I say always, when the candidate is here, it's not only about him or her answering the question, but also in us, the certain thing that we take from a candidate as well. So thank you so much for your good work. I think I must say I was touched by the issue when you said you are a board member of the Samaritan, the one that you spoke about. I mean, it takes patriotism, it takes love, it takes your South African pride to do some of the work which some people will never be doing. And also being a reserve force, it's something that has been in my heart, something that I've been raising for the as well, to say that this is our country, we love it. And before you are releasing, I know is there anything that you want to say to the portfolio committee or any question that you want to ask before you leave? We are giving you that opportunity as well. You look like a churchman as well. You look like you're a pastor. No, what do you mean? I was shocked that you're a lawyer. I just saw a humble man whom I think it's a woman. I met you because I thought I was the only one. Are you okay, Umberta?
No, I am a Catholic. I attend church every day except on a Saturday, because a Saturday are usually reserved in the practice of the north. I don't know about this for funerals and those family affairs. So usually on Saturday I do not go over there because I stay not too far from the cathedral. I make time to attend every day as and when I can. So but otherwise I do not have any questions except to say I'm greatly humbled by the opportunity that you have given me. It is not always that I get an opportunity to talk to great men and women. And when this opportunity comes, I must say thank you and thank you again.
Okay, thank you, and Madam Harder, and was it your first time in Parliament?
Yes, first time.
Oh, I gave a tip. Oh, yeah, so you listen. Thank you. They will take you out and maybe take photos out there. They will say, no, they have need hatred. Thank you so much. Thank you for your time. Thank you for patriotism. And keep on doing the good work for South Africa and the development of our languages as well. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you, ma'am, for coming over the interview. My name is Talia Sundoza. I'm the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. You will be interviewed by members of the committee. Thank you for showing interest in being a member of the board, patriotism, and I really applaud you for that stance. Because a lot of people are not brave enough to take a stance. Honorable members will be interviewing you. Akutana Zunsweli, Honorable Moss, Honorable Ntakoni, Honorable Mamita Shulivan, Honorable Mabuda at the end, and then at the back you've got Honorable Panapel. What are you going to do? No, I can't remember the key before I get back to work. Okay. Then you have Honorable Fantasy. Then at the birthday of Honorable Jepala. Whatever you say, we are recorded at the back then. So that's like we are an advocate, so we will come in as soon as. So we are recorded for ourselves as well, so that we are protected. And you have 45 minutes. Answer. The question the way you want, you know, we are not looking at, it's not a job interview whereby, yeah, it's a board, so it's with a certain expectation, obviously, but we're not going to ask you like a bureaucratic post, bureaucratic post, sorry. So I think they've shown that when you speak, you have a mic on, and then switch it off, and I hope you've got a pen and a paper, because some of the candidates ask us sort of questions, and sometimes it does take our time. Before I go to the real issues, we've read your CV, we know about it, but just tell us a little bit, because when I know I did all of my booze were up, but what happened to Ramadi, I did all alone. So what do you want to do in Nigeria when it was a Kong or when you colored? So members would want to know, who are you? And you're saying the Ramadi, you lean out with the Kong or those are closer names, then the Ramadi should be paid your suit. The way you are so influential in languages, you even speak Venda. Now, Professor, we are called Venda. So when how do you do it? We do tell it. We don't tell it. We learn the name then. Okay, I think she speaks even Afrikaans, so with your character, I don't know how to. Okay, tell us, just in short, I think one, some of the members will be interested if you are married or not. That's why the Ajebola is interested to someone in this house. So just tell us who you are, just briefly for 2 minutes, and then just tell us why should we take you to be a member of God or the council of God. Thank you.
Mamelani.
Honorable members, I want to thank you for the opportunity to come on an interview with you as an aspiring member of the Board of Council. As you can see, I'm Linda. My middle name is Kongozwa and Ramadi. Those are Xhosa names, as the Honorable Chairperson has indicated. My mother is Xhosa. And my father, Evander, hence the Ramadi. And I'm married to a Nigerian, hence the Adebola.
I am sitting born. So it is 10,000 kilometers away.
I have a book at the name
of God. No, I don't know. Okay, ma'am, then you can continue. Okay, remember,
I have a cancer and end up blood in me still. My CV gives you an overall background of my legal experience. I'm not so sure if you'd want me to go through that. I studied law at the University of Pretoria. I did my LLB there, where I proceeded with a master's in human rights and constitutional practice with an elective in advanced international law. My experience has been, I'm sure you can see from my interview, I have quite an interest in human rights issues, particularly. I've worked at the Constitutional Court. I was privileged to be given a scholarship to clerk with the U.S. Court in New Jersey in conjunction with Camden University. I've also been privileged to work with the National Prosecuting Authority as a state advocate. And for the past 4 years, before February 2012, I was a legal advisor in the Pan South African Language Board, and I was there for 4 years, and I was a deputy director there for about two, and I acted as the head of legal for about 6 months. And I felt a calling to go to the bar. I wanted some practical experience. So I left Hansop to go to the Johannesburg Bar last year, and I've been privileged to be, to have litigated and been involved in very interesting and high profile cases. And I think that sums up my legal background. Other than that, I have extramural activities that I do. I'm an external examiner for the Center for Human Rights at the University of Pretoria for the master's program in international law and human rights.
Thank you, ma'am, and thank you for telling us who you are. And I think Honorable Members, we can start our job. And I know Chance, Honorable Ramila Shulivano, Honorable Sanabeth, Alphonse Scarvey, Dapane, in that order. Honorable Nonita?
Thank you very much, Advocate Ramadan. Oh, I see the greatest motivation in life is Philippians. It's chapter 4, verse 1, 3. I don't know what it says and what denomination are you.
Okay, don't trust the Bible.
All right. Yes, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. You know, you have got a very high profile CV. When I look at it, and when you read it, you were here in the Constitutional Court and what have you. But that brief moment that you went for Pansub, what were the challenges that you encountered when you were in the board as a, what you call it, as a lecturer? What were the challenges just facing the board that it wanted to be resolved at this point in time? Thank you.
I think particularly what really became an issue in the board and which led it to be dissolved were legal issues. And they are particularly in respect of personnel. I'm sure I don't have to tell you what has happened at Pansalb, where the CEO was dismissed, and the then head of legal was also dismissed.
Were you still there?
Yes, I was still there.
Oh, well,
I know all of it.
Okay.
It's mostly politics. It's politics within the organization, and it had to do with perhaps a lack of foresight, and perhaps there might have been a lack of experience on management issues with the, yes, in terms of how to manage personnel and people. It's all about being able to understand or have experience in how to handle politics in working environment, and to be able to allow people to know how to work with each other. It was more like, I don't think it was about whether PANSA was not equipped as an organization to be able to reach its mandate, but rather it was about the fact that I was appointed before you came on board, and therefore you are not a role player, and perhaps I do not like you. I think it was all about not, you know, concentrating on why you were there. It was more like petty issues of personality clashes. That is what it was all about.
Okay. Are you part of that?
No.
Okay, on your
Well, I'm not naming names.
Ah, we know everything. Lena, we are more informed than you are. What happened there?
Thank you, Chairperson. Is it the Mrs. Osborne?
Yes, that's correct.
But you married.
Yes.
I can call you Mrs.
Yes, you can, sir. Thank you.
Okay. Mrs. Adbola, you've mentioned some of the problems we've had in PASA. It's actually a very big pity that 5 years went by and we missed opportunities to build multilingualism in South Africa. You know, if there's one thing since I became a politician that really hurts me, and then it is boards in state entities that does not function well. And in arts and culture, it's not the only board that doesn't function. I came from the Communications Portfolio Committee, not to mention, you know, there's a lot of boards that are not certainly functioning. It's actually a pity, because we were talking to people, and I can't talk on behalf of my colleagues in this Portfolio Committee, but there's brilliant people we've listened to. So well educated and well spoken. You know, I'm so glad to be a middle-aged Afrikaner at this stage and to listen to all these wonderful young people with so much talent we have in this country. So we need all these people to build a better future. And, you know, if we can get a board to function well, can you imagine where can we be in 5 years' time, and what can we do with multilingualism? Everything. So what you've seen in consult, we know that there's certain aspects, you're also a law person, there's actually a couple of points in the new Language Act people are not satisfied with. Also in the consult board, there's not enough teeth, as you understand, you know, to enforce certain things. But if we have a competent board going in there, you know, wanted to serve, do you think we can reach multilingualism, and can we change the wrongs in that organization so that we can at least leave a legacy of good governance, at least in Ponsard? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you for that question, sir. I certainly believe, with what I have experienced in handling a lot of human rights complaints and being directly involved in how best it would be, how best the PANSA mandate can be implemented. And I simply believe that it is realizable that the PANSA mandate, and particularly multilingualism, can in fact work in this country. And I say so because if you look at other countries that, or rather similar jurisdictions, that have had to work with not only just one language, or also two languages. In fact, the board had in the past investigated how Canada had implemented using English and French as a workable, as two workable languages conjunctionally. And, you know, research has shown that indeed this is realizable. So the issue is not about whether multilingualism can actually be realized per se, but it's also about whether the people that are given the duty to implement it understand the mandate, or rather they understand how to go about doing so. And I found that the challenge that faced PANSELP was the fact that the powers that be did not understand the mandate or how it can be implemented. We had many human rights cases, and what was challenging was that despite the fact that we were given rather the power to mediate and arbitrate on issues that are that relate to languages, the fact that when it came to protecting the actual rights of the people that were complaining, we found that, you know, there was a block because the implementation part was challenged. You see, what happens with the cases is that the cases are reported by the public to PANSELP, and PANSELP investigates the issues, and then they call the two parties together to try and mediate between them and try to find a solution to the matter. But what usually happens, is that you'll find that either the state party that is involved is not cooperating and would have to call them forward to the committee to come and answer to language rights violations. And even though they do, after the hearing, all we can do is to publish the findings of the committee. So there isn't really an enforceable mechanism that is going to actually help PANSELP to be, you know, a power, to give it teeth, as you had said. So that is basically where the problem came in. The complainants were not satisfied with the solutions that PANSELP was coming up with, and that is because there wasn't really implementation. You couldn't go to court. You couldn't go to court. You couldn't get a court order that will force the government to respect the language right violation. And that is basically, I think that was probably what was the challenge with the current act, because the current act doesn't really give you the right to go to court. What it does is it still says you go to the ombudsman. And I think in issues of litigation or human rights violations, we have, for instance, in human rights, we have the Human Rights Court, the African Human Rights Court, where you can take human rights violations and you have court orders that force the guilty party to enforce. So I think that is probably what should have been in the act, to make sure that PANSELP does not become what they call a toothless bulldog.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Advocate Ramadi Adabola. You were talking about the implementation. Now, I want to refer to the Use of Official Languages Bill, which has become an act since 2012, last year, etc. Now, the PANSELP will be responsible for monitoring the implementation of that act. Now, you also mentioned that you, with the previous PANSELP board, you were a legal advisor. What advice, Elizabeth, will you be giving to the PANSELP board in connection with the implementation? implementation of this very important act, which I believe can promote multilingualism as well. Thank you. The advice that I would give to the board was, first of all, I would advise that all the board members understand the mandate, first of all, which I think is very crucial. And once you understand the mandate, then you will understand that you will need to work hand in hand with the stakeholders, which are actually the government departments, and which are the courts. And in fact, that even the public sector should be roped in, because we have many language rights complaints from the public against private, from the private sector like banks, for instance. And the old act, I'm talking about the Pan South African Language Board Act, only gave jurisdiction for the board to monitor and implement it only to the public sector, which is the government departments and courts. Now, when it comes to implementation, you'd have to bring on board the government departments. You need to school them on the act as well. You need to make them understand what the mandate is, and also that the constitution demands that languages be protected in the country. And then you need to make them understand that it would be unconstitutional if they were to allow anyone in the public to have their language right violated or not have the right to exercise their language or mother tongue. And once you put them on board, because I think more than anything, PANSOLV needs to be heard and to be known that it exists. I realized when I was there that most of the public didn't know that PANSOLV is there. They didn't know that they could go to a board where they could complain about any infringement of their language rights, or perhaps if they were not allowed to exercise their mother tongue. And but to go back to your question, in terms of implementation, once you have the public departments, all the stakeholders on board, and you school them on the act, then you will come up with strategies that everybody that is involved would be on board on. And that would allow PANSOLV to be able to work hand in hand with the public departments. And then we'll come up with strategies on how best to implement. And there would of course be a monitoring mechanism to see whether or not the issues that had been agreed on at meetings or at conferences that would be held have actually been reached. So goals would be set and so on, and there'd be accountability. So we need to make stakeholders accountable, and I think that would be the best way to go about the implementation of this act. And I think also, I think perhaps MOUs that would have to be signed so that public departments would feel that they are obliged in some moral way to comply with protection of language rights in the country. But I think other than that, the constitution itself demands that the stakeholders, the government departments, and so on come on board.
I have to say personally, I actually have answered the questions I have, because I was going to ask what she can tell us, that this was within the service of stage. So she has already done that. The only thing now I may ask, what do you think Advocate Ramari could be done to promote the use of indigenous languages? Because, you know, even the educations that are met to do that, they are failing. They are using informal language, slangs. What do you think is supposed to be done to encourage the use of these languages?
Thank you, sir, for that question. A very important one. And what needs to be done is to go back to the drawing book. Because if you want to teach a generation now how to appreciate our mother tongue and to develop it, you need to start from scratch. You need to start from the elementary schools. We need to go back to the books that are being published and make sure that the quality of the books that are being used right from elementary school, primary school, high school to university stage are of good standard. So the publication of books and the teaching of the mother tongue should be at a very high standard right from the beginning. And I think that is the best way to go about making sure that these languages do not die off, that the culture does not die off, and also to make sure that the speakers of the language feel that this language is at par with other languages that have been previously advantaged in the past. So unless we do that, if you want to take a university student and tell them that they are not speaking proper Sotho at that stage, it's a little bit late, unless they start taking classes in that particular language. So I think the education of our country should be very much at the forefront in making sure that our languages, particularly the indigenous languages, don't die off. And not only that, but I think the traditional readers should be put into the picture to make sure that part of the language and culture is preserved, and also that there are pride is instilled across the board, starting from the rural areas, the urban areas, and it should also be embraced within the public sector. Currently, as we're speaking, English is the working language of the country together with Afrikaans. It's very rare that you will find Zulu or Xhosa as a working language, but I think that an option should be given where you should be allowed to speak your mother tongue at a meeting, at a conference. We have interpreters available for that. And if we are not going to advocate that, then we are a very long way off from achieving what we want to achieve or what the Constitution initially wanted to achieve. And I think what TANSA needs to do is have roadshows where it goes and makes its voice heard across the country to know that they exist. TANSA has a lexicography unit where dictionaries are produced, and that is an important aspect. Most of the people in the country don't know that you can find dictionaries in all the 11 official languages, that you can find the constitution in all the 11 official languages, or that you can go to a government department and be given service in all the 11 official languages. If you go to court, the presiding officer speaks English or Afrikaans, or rather, in fact, it's English now. And the interpreters might interpret. If an interpreter says he's going to interpret isiZulu, and you are speaking isiZulu, there are some words that are not really Zulu words, and they are used even in interpreting, and it may mean a very serious issue, especially in court, and especially when you have a criminal case, and you are asked where the injury was it on the waist or on the buttock. And we have a similar word in Zulu and in Sotho, and they mean different things. And unless the interpreter knows the correct word, it can mean a life and death issue to somebody who's standing trial. So those are very critical issues. And also, it's also very, very important to understand what it means to learn in a second language. You must remember that the chances of a student who actually studies in their mother tongue excelling is higher than a student who studies a particular discipline in a second language. Because what happens is that the student receives the information in English. For instance, I'm talking, for instance, hypothetically of a student who is Xhosa speaking, but he learns up to university stage in Xhosa. When he gets to university, everything is in English. And what happens is that the student might have a very high IQ as compared to an English speaking student. But because the English student is getting the education or the information firsthand, they might perform better than the student with a high IQ but understands Zulu better. Because what happens is you take the information in Zulu, you first have to translate it in your head before you understand it into Zulu. So the chances are that student won't perform as well as they could have if they were receiving the information in their mother tongue.
So those are the important issues. And if PANSAP would go to workshops, partner with universities, partner with schools, partner with government departments, partner with courts, and make sure that dictionaries are out, the constitution is out in all official languages, the translation is up to standard, and that the education is of a high standard from elementary school, I think we'll come closer to realizing what the constitution has envisaged.
Maybe I should just ask my question then, because I don't usually find that this opportunity. My issue is, I want to ask, I can see, I went for a saving. Do you have any business that is registered, any name that can cause a conflict of interest? Because some of the issues I find that people that have got members, and then you find the same company, your company is benefiting from the same institution that you're supposed to oversee. So I want to check, is there any business registered that is not going to conflict it, if appointed, not conflicted with what is done? Thank you.
Yes, I do have businesses, but they will not conflict with the board. And why I say so, my businesses are out of the country. I have an automobile business in Nigeria, and I have a building project there as well. So I don't think that should be an issue.
Okay. Members?
When she answered that question.
She answered the whole thing. I thought I was the only one. So
so is she now limit us now in asking her questions? Because she answered that before we asked her.
Okay. I think you started French. Maybe now I must ask. What was the purpose?
Yes, ma'am.
What was the purpose? I don't know.
Well, initially...
the confusion. In the other languages.
French. Wow. I did that in high school and a year or two at university. My interest in French, initially, I took French because I thought it was a romantic language.
Wow.
That was my initial. I never knew I had another plan. I realize now, because I have interest in human rights matters and international law, if I were to open up an NGO or work with the United Nations, those are the working languages. And it has helped, because French is actually the second most progressive language after English. And we have many African countries that are speaking French. So it has quite helped me a lot, especially with what I have passion in doing in the future. So it will come in very handy. And it helped me when I went to Paris the other day.
Okay. So I will ask you a personal question to say that now you are a real language practitioner. Do you have children?
Yes, ma'am, I do.
How many?
I have two children. My son is, and my daughter is 6 years old, and my son is 4.
Now the personal question. What language do they speak?
Ma'am?
What language do they speak? To see that you really practicing.
Yeah.
What language do they speak?
Okay. I'm teaching them Xhosa. They can communicate with me in Xhosa, and then their father speaks to them in English.
So now I'm checking, because in South Africa we won't win the battle, because we are also the parents, our children. We take them to school, and I get embarrassed in malls, especially I would say with the stated, with the certain class. I know in the communist Spanish sector there's no working class. Either you are a capitalist or you are a peasant. So that's how it works. This is just the same that was in the revolution thing. But I get embarrassed with intellect. Their children can't speak English. Our own languages. You find in malls a black parent like me speaking English with a child. You find an Afrikaner parent speaking African to the child, while with the child is attending English school, you know. That's why I'm asking the question, because I want to see what contribution I'm making. Are you studying at home? You visit houses, Mashallah, are you invited? You say the child in Kalamans. Mommy, what is she saying? What is this auntie saying? I'm raising this because we can't be saying we're black, we're Africans, then we can't speak our own language. This is the thing, you know. We had a situation in Soweto. I don't remember what it was calling. All the kids from Soweto were playing alone, and they were not playing with this child, Galina. And the people asked, why are you playing? Like, why are you alone done? Why are you not playing with the other kids? I'm calling this room to not Galina. They said, no, I don't speak English, so we're not going to play with him because we don't have a husband. Yeah, who said, because now it becomes practical, you know. I'm asking you this question as well, is, are you studying at home? No. Because some of your teachers, your children go to model schools, your teachers will always say, no, the child, the English of the child is not good, because they don't speak English at home. So I'm asking you based on that, because if you are serious about your language issue, you will start your own home. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know whether you want to answer that.
Yes, of course. Mm-hmm. I think I have. Mm-hmm. I teach them Xhosa, and I think I've been helped because my mom, you know, is Xhosa speaking, so she speaks to them in Xhosa, and so are my siblings. And most of the time, they're with my mother anyway.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
No. Members, we don't have any follow-up. No.
The big problem is if you are a parent, you take a child to a modified school, then they say, no, this child cannot communicate in English, then they don't take the child. And they have no way to take a child where the child can be taught, as you say, in his own, her own mother tongue, where the child can comprehend better. Because she's not trying to translate the letter into the mother tongue, because the mother is taught in English, but she has got their mother tongue in her making. But this is what happens. That's what prompts parents to try and teach their children English. Because they get not admitted at this school. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable. That's a very good question. You see, I have realized that the reason why parents take their children to model schools is because of the standard of their education. And all parents want their children to get the best. So we can't really blame them for taking them there. But the oversight they have is the fact that in as much as they're gaining a good education, they're losing something else which is equally important, which is the ability for the child to articulate themselves in their mother language, and which also goes into an appreciation of one's culture. And I think what needs to be done to resolve the issue is to increase the level of education in our mother tongue teaching schools. Unless the level of education in our mother tongue speaking schools is at par, then it